Welcome to Character Explorations, a podcast production of the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque. I'm Annalee Ward, the director of the Wendt Center, and our guest today is Jen Soppel, Associate Professor of Communications at the University of Dubuque. She is the author of the article, Parents' Growing Pains on Social Media, Modeling Authenticity. This article is available online at dbq.edu/went/publications. That's dbq.edu/wendt/publications. Welcome, Professor Soppel.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you wrote this article for the journal issue Character and Social Media way back in 2015.
Unreal.
Well, our listeners may think it's strange to ask you to talk about this article now, but we still find that you get so many hits and downloads. This article still has relevance and still speaks to us. So if it's okay, I'd like to read your abstract, which really reinforces its relevance, and then we can talk specifics. She writes that this article addresses the question of what it means to parent with integrity in a digital environment. Issues of disclosure, boundaries, identity, and authenticity all contribute to a consideration of locating the ethical line in creating a digital footprint for others, specifically our children. I see that as so relevant today, and we all recognize that people are grappling with the challenges of social media. But when I look around, it's very often a personal focus. And you have said that this is a focus on parents as they interact with their children. And you've mentioned that this is the ultimate identity workshop. What do you mean by that?
Well, one thing that I'll say in my classes a great deal is it's all about identity. For me, that's what it really comes back to. And when I say it's all about identity, I'm referring to our communication. About ourselves, about others, with others. My students like to joke that if you just want to score points with me, just somehow tie something back to identity. So in terms of online performance of identity, and when I say performance, I don't mean it in the negative sense of often we conflate performance with something that is inauthentic or not real, but rather we are sharing certain aspects of our identity online and choosing to not share other aspects as a rule. And so in that sense that there is an audience and we are able to edit what we post, consider what we post before we post it, going a little out of order there, potentially delete what we post to the degree that we can in an online environment. It really gives us a chance to kind of create a version of ourselves and as parents, versions of ourselves as parents and versions of our families that we may not have the opportunity to do in an offline environment.
You've asked parents to consider how they use or misuse their children on social media. And how do you relate all of that to identity? And I don't know, what got you thinking about this topic in the first place? Maybe we should start there.
Well, identity is my kind of the linchpin of what I like to study in communication, whether it be in digital environments, organizational environments, interpersonal relationships. Again, it really comes back to that for me. At the time that I was writing this, My oldest child was 10 years old, and I had remarried but had previously been divorced, and that was really at the start of Facebook social media posting. And I recognized, with the help of a good therapist, that some of the things I was posting were really more about wanting to show the world that I was still a good person and I could be a good mom even if I was divorced, which I considered to be a failing at that time. So I was working through a lot of stuff, and I was frankly using my adorable, very smart, photogenic oldest child to do so.
And what switched for you, or how did you see that you were using them?
I was reading a book by Richard Jenkins called Social Identity, where he kind of takes a modern examination of Irving Goffman's work and on the multiple dimensions of identity, face work, impression management. And in reading that, started kind of down the rabbit hole that I tend to go down in terms of research and seeing what other people referenced him. And there were other scholars that were kind of taking it down that path that I just started applying it to my own life. I tell students that the easiest way to understand difficult or unfamiliar concepts is to say, okay, how can I make this relate to what I do understand? And once I started to do that with what I was posting about my son, I realized, oh dear.
Well, that's one of your first comments in this article, is that as we begin to look for strategies of how to do this, the first thing is awareness. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about awareness, what do you mean? Or maybe some of the terms that you talked about in this section, things like oversharing and things like that.
Right. So oversharenting. So it's parenting combined with oversharing, and generally oversharing, it's a way of sharing about yourself through the use of a child. So I would share funny examples about my son, funny stories that he would tell, but in doing so was saying, oh, look at the way I'm exposing my children to complex ideas and concepts, or oh, look at the way that I have him out in nature, what a good parent I am, and would use humble bragging as a way to do that.
Tell me more about that.
Kind of humble bragging, yeah, is kind of mocking yourself or acting like you hate something, but really to show yourself in a certain, ultimately positive light. Like, I believe I used an example in the article about, oh my gosh, why did I agree to do this craft project? I have been up like for 2 weeks, shoot me now. And the performance is, oh, I hate all this. But the brag is humbly, oh, look at me, what a great parent I am. And
that takes a tremendous amount of self-awareness to recognize these kinds of things that are happening. As you talked about impression management, you mentioned both overt and indirect impression management. Mm-hmm. Did you have any other examples you'd like to share?
Well, I think,
in a sense, humble bragging, right, is that, right?
Exactly. Would be not an overt version of impression management. When we think about overt impression management that people would do about themselves, they would be doing it... So, like, for example, on LinkedIn, I just received a promotion, I'm moving to an organization. That's very clear impression management. See me in this way, in this professional setting, and I'm sharing things about myself to hopefully form an impression of me in a certain way in that context, in my professional identity. When parents, and this is not to say that all parents are doing this necessarily intentionally or at all. Again, that's where the awareness comes in. Mm-hmm. I happen to be doing exactly those things, and that's not to say that every parent is. But that covert impression management, again, would be through things like humble bragging. One way that because I presented on this at the Western States Communication Conference, and there were three new parents on the panel with me, and they were a little flustered by the topic, and they were like, how do I know if I'm doing this, and like, what's going on? And I guess to that I would ask people to ask themselves, well, what does this post about your child say about you? Not to say that that's what you were thinking when you posted it, but what could it potentially say about you? And if everything that's posted perhaps puts you in a certain light that you would definitely prefer people to have, most of us aren't sharing everything about ourselves online and intentionally. For me, the concern comes when children become almost a prop in that form of impression management.
Important reflections, and I thank you for that challenge to remember how we are using, and I put that in air quotes, using others when we post about others like our children. You also discuss authenticity on social media. What do you mean by that? What is it and what is it not?
I believe I mentioned in the article that is something, coming to a definition of that is something that I very much wrestled with when I was writing this. Exploring this for me, it was, well, authenticity is being honest. So if a parent posts about their child, that's fine because they're being honest. These things happen, right? Well, then the question of whose authenticity is it, or rather, who gets to determine whose authentic self is shared when and with whom when we are dealing with an online audience? So there's two issues that I found really interesting when researching this that make disclosure about both ourselves and others in an online environment so different than disclosure, say, over your dining room table. So, and those two things are scope and permanence. So when I wrote this article, I believe there were around 2 billion internet users worldwide. It ranges between 5.5 and 5.7 billion now. It's over 65% of the world population. It was one third at the time that I wrote this. So that scope has more than doubled. So, you know, telling the story, the family stories that we tell to kind of embarrass, or, you know, the funny family stories that we tell around the kitchen table with a very small audience of maybe like a new girlfriend or an aunt or an uncle or neighbors who've joined us. It's a much smaller scope than 5.5 billion. And then permanence, you know, stories can be forgotten books can be lost, but the internet at this point is fairly permanent marker. The Wayback Machine is a great tool and in many instances a lot of people's downfall. So I'm just very grateful to have grown up in a time where the frankly stupid things I was doing could not have been recorded.
What a world.
Yeah.
The before and the after the internet.
Yeah. So scope and permanence being two very key components to wrestling with authenticity, because when you're talking about, you know, sharing, quote unquote, your authentic self in an online environment is one thing, but to determine what the authentic self of another is. And at various, I mean, we are different people throughout our lives.
Right.
And to determine that for someone else is difficult.
One of the things that we talked about during that semester was the permanence issue. And what are kids going to be saying to their parents about, why did you ever post this, that, or the next thing? Because my friends found it.
Mm-hmm. There's actually an interesting article by Kate Lindsay in The Atlantic in 2023, where it's about how the first social media babies have now reached the grown age. And the word that was most used about their feelings, seeing what was posted about them before their age of consent, was horrified.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were powerless.
Powerless.
Powerless to determine it.
And at the same time, my two youngest children now, I have three, just less than 48 hours ago asked me, Mom, why don't you post pictures of us online like so-and-so and so-and-so does? And I just say, I want you to be able to choose what goes on for you. Well, what if I tell you something is okay to post? And of course, my youngest is just like, well, I just want to make TikToks. And so, no. But it's, ironically, my kids would like me. At this time, they say they would like me to post more.
Right.
My oldest has said he is grateful that my earliest attempts were scrubbed, and he hasn't had to deal with that growing up. But we'll see. They may feel differently.
We recognize that much continues to change every day, every week. Since you wrote this, what kinds of developments have you been aware of or have you tracked? Is there better self-awareness on parents' parts, for example?
Oh, that is a great question. And I would say yes and no in answer to that last part. But going back, in terms of kind of what has changed, if you read the article, I mentioned at the time in 2015, a lot of the online community was working in blogs, which were longer form writing, obviously much more intentional communities. You wouldn't necessarily stumble across them in a feed necessarily, that you would hear about them through words of mouth or different articles, and then you'd have to search them out and join them. And it just took more work to get to them and to get through it. And you'd have to join to be able to leave a comment. So it was a different platform that people were working from a lot of the time that were commenting on this issue. Right. So since we have moved to much quicker platforms such as TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, everything along those lines, the potential for interaction with people we don't necessarily know is much greater and happens at a much faster pace. And the ability to comment on people's choices is much, again, it's not part of a community that you are necessarily a part of. It could just be something that you stumbled across that came across on your reel. And so to fire off a quick judgment on someone's choices is much easier and more likely at this time. So you see a lot of judging, obviously a lot of bullying, and also a lot more opportunities for the monification or commoditization of children on these platforms. Mm. So there was, and if I may, Michael Keller's did a study of 5,000 girl influencers. This was in the New York Times, and they were all managed by their mothers. And the title was Managed by Moms, Stalked by Men. And it looked at the involvement, obviously, in parents in these girls social media presence is. And then in the comments and the direct messages, engagement with their platforms was to a large degree adult men. And one out of three preteens, as part of the study, declared that they wanted to be influencers at some point in their future. And
what an aspiration.
Yeah, so to say that a lot has changed, I think, would be a gross understatement, and that it almost feels like it feels anachronous, an anomaly to choose otherwise.
So it does feel like there's a growing divide between parents who choose no postings versus parents who are willing to put it out there.
Put it out there, or I mean,
or and manage it.
Manage it, and I mean, at some point for families, it can become the primary family income, and that is not most families, obviously, but when kids see online influencers getting, you know, doing opening or unboxing segments of all of the gear and swag and whatnot that they've gotten from different organizations, it can be a very, very persuasive experience.
Wow. Well, in terms of being a parent with consideration for one's children's, for how one's posting about one's children, do you have any last words? Do you have any last bits of advice or comments you'd like to make?
That for me, it's not about judging in a black and white sense that if you post about your children online, you are bad, and if you don't post about your children online, you are good. That is not what the purpose of this article was meant to be, but rather exploring what does it mean to be aware of yourself and what you are communicating through communicating about your children online, whether it be stories you tell or pictures you post or the platforms you choose to engage in, that the first step in determining, you know, is this the right choice, is having an awareness of yourself. Because I think that's the first step in being a good parent, whether it's online or not.
Thank you for that. Thank you very much. This has been Professor Jen Supple, and she has again reminded us of the need for parents to be privacy stewards for their children, for parents to be more self-aware and more reflective in how they use those social platforms. And so I thank you, Professor Supple, Associate Professor of Communication at the University of Dubuque, and I'm Annalee Ward for Character Explorations from the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque.